everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the World's Most Mutant Podcast. That's right, it's Uncanny Treks, but this time we are covering your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. We are covering the first two episodes of the new Disney series. I'm probably going to just call it Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man regularly instead of Your Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man, because I don't like the second person, Matt. I always tell my students to never use the second person. But I'm Bob in Cascadia. That's Matt in the Southland. Matt, how you doing this evening?
Doing pretty well, Bob. I don't use second person that often. It's hard to. You really have to try.
My students love to use it in writing, which I think has something to do with the spread of video games and the spread of social media. That's my theory, at least. But I can't say that I care for it.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, Bob, one thing I can say that I do care for, I'm enjoying the Spider-Man, Bob.
Matt, do you want to take a victory lap on this? When the trailer for this first dropped, I said it looked like it sucked. I said I hated it. I said I wasn't going to watch it. Do you want to take a victory lap over the fact that here I am watching it, talking about it with you?
You were more negative about it than I was. I was not too excited about it either. Honestly, it looked weird to me. And I really thought the animation was going to suck, because I thought they were going for the whole the what if look. But then once I saw it in motion, I'm okay with it.
And that's exactly my thought too. I thought the animation didn't look good in the trailer, or maybe it was just the shock of the new.
Yeah.
But seeing it in the context of two episodes, I was like, okay, no, this is actually very well done, especially compared to the rather shoddy animation on the first season of What If, which is the only season I watched.
Yeah, so when I initially heard this show was going to come out, it was going to originally be called Spider-Man Freshman Year. I was not looking forward to going back in time to Spider-Man in high school. I've seen enough of that. Tobey Maguire hit that in that first movie just fine. Andrew Garfield did in the movie, yes. The other guy, what I can't think of his name right now, the one that...
Hooper?
That's not it. Hooper?
That's like something... Tom Holland.
He's got nothing but the high school stuff going on. So I've seen a lot of that. And I know enough about Spider-Man and a retina Spider-Man that there's a whole lifetime of stories after his high school adventures. And so when I saw this was coming back to high school, I was like, oh, crap.
He's only in high school for maybe like 5 years in the comic. He graduates, actually probably just more like 2 or 3 years. He graduates in the 20s or the 30s of Amazing Spider-Man.
Right. And I just did not want to see that whole rehash of the origin and the high school thing again. And I'm wondering if that's why they changed the name, because of fans like me who, when I saw that the name of the show going to be freshman year, this is not going to be great.
I agreed with you that that didn't sound good. And then another reason that I wasn't going to watch it is maybe I was misunderstanding, but my understanding at the outset was the Spider-Man freshman year, Spider-Man sophomore year was meant to just be the animated adventures of Tom Holland, Spider-Man in the MCU. And not being a big MCU fan, not having seen any of the Tom Holland Spider-Mans after the first, I didn't really want that. And so when I found out that this was retitled and I found out that it's set, I believe, in a parallel universe to the MCU,
right,
that actually got my interest, because it's okay, they'll have the freedom to do some stuff, right?
Right, and they can switch up the story, which they've done in a very interesting way, and we'll get into that in a minute. I do want to ask you this, Bob. Were you surprised that Uncle Ben is already dead?
He's already dead well before Peter Parker gets the spider bite. It's a very interesting way they open this. I mean, they also tease you a little bit where there's that significant scene where Peter misses his train and he looks in his knapsack, and is he looking for a costume to swing? And then no, it's just a fake out, right?
Right.
So... yeah, it's a very interesting thing they've done here with throwing up the motivations, right? I guess they're going to have to go back and explain it, but I don't necessarily want them to. I just want them to keep moving forward in the new status quo. I don't necessarily need an in-depth explanation of Uncle Ben having been dead. And we haven't even heard the words, with great power comes great responsibility, which I don't necessarily need to hear those words. But I have a feeling, though, because we haven't heard those words, we're going to have to go back and explain something about that, something about him.
Poor Bob, he hasn't seen all the Tom Holland movies yet, so he's just lost. Any listeners right now are like, man, Bob, you're missing out.
I'm really not. I get my Spider-Man memes from the internet, Matt. I don't need to go to MCU movies to get my Spider-Man memes.
Well, let me say this, Bob. You're talking about Uncle Ben. I'm talking about, I don't want them to ever go back and talk about Peter Parker's parents. Please, Lord, don't do that. That's what the Andrew Garfield films did. It's so boring. So boring.
I saw both Andrew Garfield films, but I gotta be honest, I most for him skateboarding in an empty warehouse. And fighting a pretty weak design of Electro as Jamie Foxx's Electro in the second. That's pretty much all I remember.
That was the gist of both the films, yes. And there was a, there, but see, the thing I'm talking about, I think it was so bad they actually cut a lot of it out just because it was worthless. But I never want to hear about Peter Parker's parents.
Well, another interesting change-up they do is they make Doctor Strange pretty integral to the origin of Spider-Man, which in a way makes sense given that Ditko basically created both Doctor Strange and Spider-Man. But it's definitely new. We see Doctor Strange fighting what seems to be a type of interdimensional symbiote, which is, that's how it's identified in the vocal credits at the end of the episode.
Right.
Well, so Venom type thing, a symbiote is fighting Doctor Strange, and then somehow a spider, interdimensional spider, falls out of the portal, lands on Peter, bites him, right? And so that is a interesting, taking it away from the lab accident and putting it more in the multiversal alien context is another interesting tweak to the whole origin.
Yeah, I agree, Bob. That Venom looking creature, it doesn't look exactly like the symbiote we've seen. The part, like the parts are there. Yeah, it's got the eyes. It's got the eyes. And were you cool with Doctor Strange's stuff? Him doing all the magic. You know how much I hate magic, Bob. But I thought the whip stuff was cool. All right, I'll give him that. Him hollering at the cape. I don't like that. That's not cool. That's too cheesy.
I like it. I mean, that's picking up on the two, especially the second Doctor Strange. I do like that he's having the cape actively save people while he fights the thing. I do like that division of labor. It makes him feel more like a superhero, right?
It gives me like Beauty and the Beast Cinderella vibes of like the moving furniture.
Matt's just really against anthropomorphism. He's really against it.
These objects that just become human.
Another thing about this that was interesting, and I think in some ways is probably a legacy for it originally being conceived as an MCU show. And now, granted, it's not the voice, the different voice actor.
Right.
In terms of design, we still very much have the Marissa Tomei, May Parker. And she's also still an Iron Man fan. I believe she is in the first Tom Holland Spider-Man.
Correct. Yeah, that's a running gag. Yeah.
And I do want to praise to get hyped up for this. And also just because I'd always wanted to watch it. I've been watching Spectacular Spider-Man, the cartoon from the late aughts. I think it was that right before the Disney acquisition that the Disney acquisition killed.
Mm-hmm.
That Disney hates so much you can't even watch it on Disney. I'm happy to get it on DVD. From my local library, because you can't stream it as far as I can tell.
Yeah, wow.
But it's a good show. It's by the creators of Young Justice and Gargoyle. So, you know, I like their work. It's not a perfect show, but it's a good show. But I will say one of the things I would detract about Spectacular Spider-Man is their Aunt May is pretty annoying. And so it's nice to have a less annoying Aunt May. Although in general, I would say at this point, I prefer Spectacular Spider-Man to Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man. But on the other hand, Spectacular Spider-Man got cut short at 2 seasons. Whereas this is already renewed for 3 schools. So it's got a chance to go longer and be much better.
I hope it continues its momentum and stays strong. Which these 2 episodes have been great. So, Bob, the thing about Aunt May, that is one change that's been like a huge shift from our childhood. Aunt May's hot. She's hot now. This is a trend among a lot of these people. Like, look at all the hot Alfreds we've had. You know what I mean?
Well, on the one hand, I want to make clear, it's not a leap, it's a trend, like you're saying. So if you move from the Tobey Maguire to the Andrew Garfield to the Tom Holland Spider-Man, the actress playing Aunt May gets progressively younger and progressively hotter in each iteration, right?
Yeah, and Alfred's the same way. We go from, like, the dude, Alan Napier in the 60s, all the way to Michael Goff. The other dude was, like, 30, the one in the most recent thing. Or maybe 40. He was our age.
I can't remember if he played Alfred in The Batman or in, I think, was it Jeremy Irons played him in Batman v Superman?
It was Jeremy Irons in Batman v Superman.
Jeremy Irons a little bit screws up your curve there, but I agree with you generally. That's also the trend with Alfred. And
Michael Caine was younger than the other one, too. We got to add him. It works, yeah.
So from the 90s films to the Nolan films with Michael Caine, you're getting younger, and then not so much from Nolan to Batman v Superman, but then, yeah, from Batman v Superman to the
Batman.
I agree. That's a trend. And it is interesting. I was just inclined, when you say it's Aunt May getting younger and hotter, I'm just inclined to chalk that up to Hollywood sexism. Actually, it is interesting that it's a trend you could see with Alfred. It's maybe a trend you could see with Commissioner Gordon as well.
Oh, yeah, that's true as well. The thing is, I think that it's just like we all suddenly realize that just because you have a mentor figure, they don't have to be 50 years older than you. They can be younger and still teach you things.
Somebody who's trying to teach Peter Parker something, Do you know who Nico Minoru is?
And the only way I know her, Bob, is from Marvel's Midnight Suns, which is a fantastic tactical role-playing RPG game. I know you don't like games, Bob, but it's great.
I think Noah likes it too, but I think you like it more than Noah, if I remember correctly.
Probably so, yeah. It's just a... But she's a main character in that, and I don't like magic. I don't care for it, but the thing about this game, one of the big themes is it's technology versus magic. So you know which side I was on there, and I got to play with those characters. Yeah, yeah. But she does have some fantastic interactions in that game with, like, Wanda Maximoff, Ghost Rider, and Spider-Man.
I totally forgot that she was in that game. I knew it and then had forgotten it. And so that makes sense that that's how you know her. Actually, you know her better than I do, because I know she's in Runaways, but I've only read, like, maybe the first couple of issues of Runaways. I've wanted to read the whole series. It's supposed to be a very good series, but I've just never gotten around to it.
Yeah. And just for listeners, she usually goes by Sister Grimm.
I hear her more described by her name than by her code name. Yeah. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
It's there, just in case anyone wants to know.
Philosophical question to ask, Matt.
Yeah.
So, well, using the live stream chat thing in this cartoon, is that live stream chat type thing, is that always going to be with us from here on out because of technology? Or is it the type of thing that people are going to set aside, and so in a decade or two, those parts of this cartoon are going to look crazy dated?
So when that scene occurs, when he's getting in the fight and everything, and they're recording it with their TikTok and all that stuff, it really stood out to me. It sticks out like a sore thumb, because I'm not used to seeing that in a Spider-Man cartoon, especially Spider-Man the Animated Series in the 90s. What's happened is we've replaced them taking photographs and putting them on newspapers with the cell phones and the recording and streaming and all that crap. So it's more of just showing how, like, the setting has evolved. I do ask you this, Bob, though. Batman the Animated Series, that setting is basically timeless. I don't see a lot of that anymore in cartoons.
Well, there's ways it's not timeless, because there's ways that it's very 1940s, but then it also has very advanced but very retro technology. But you're right, that doesn't come up in every
But yeah, and what I mean is you just can't really pinpoint when it actually occurs, because the technology, it's not as confusing. If I would have shown myself this back in the 90s, I would have been confused out of my mind. But if I would have done the opposite, it probably would not have been.
Well, and I think this maybe is a difference between Marvel and DC, where I think Marvel characters usually need to be in contemporary settings, whereas DC characters maybe benefit from a little more iconic treatment, where like Batman the Animated Series or Caped Crusader or Superman the Animated Series, they feel good for being retro. Does that make sense?
It does make sense, but I do see, like, with the newest Superman, even there we see a lot of technology type stuff that's going to be like the streaming and thing, that same stuff.
Which I hate, yes. If you're ambivalent about.
Yeah, it doesn't really bother me as much. I just feel like the next, they're going to keep making these Spider-Man cartoons anyway, Bob, so we'll just have one for each decade.
I watched the 90s Spider-Man in full. Yeah, what we watched it as kids, but I watched it in full a few years ago. And then I sampled all the other Spider-Man cartoons last year, this year, before just deciding Spectacular Spider-Man was the only other one I wanted to watch. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but my impression from looking at a few episodes of all of them, so 80s Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends, Spectacular Spider-Man, the MTV Spider-Man, Ultimate Spider-Man with Luke Cage and White Tiger and Iron Fist as teenagers, or the more recent, I think it's the 2017 Spider-Man.
Yeah, those are the other
ones. They all feel very contemporary, right? They all, at least in my memory, they all feel they're very much set in the year they first come out.
Yes, that makes sense. It really do. I can't think, like, technology-wise, what we would have seen in those episodes that may seem outdated now, but it's definitely there.
Well, one thing I wanted to hit you with, Matt, that's not in the notes, and I realized this today and it blew my mind, and I had to text you and several other people about it blowing my mind, is this right now, this year, is the first year that we've had an ongoing Superman, Batman, Spider-Man, and X-Men cartoon. It's only the second time ever. The 90s would be the other time, right?
And yeah.
It's just wild.
Jeez, that is wild. But I guess we're all of age now, so we created this. We really liked that back then. We're going to remake it.
I didn't actually look at the dates, but maybe between X-Men Evolution and Wolverine and the X-Men, there have probably been times where there have been Batman, X-Men, and Spider-Man cartoons all at once. But Superman's the outlier there, and because there hasn't been a cartoon in between Superman the Animated Series and the current Superman series that I don't care for, that's what makes it special with the big four cartoons.
Right, that does make sense. So, you know, on a side note there, I would consider adding Justice League Unlimited, though, if you're going to say Superman, because then at least you have those characters being represented on television.
Yeah, but he always looks like a chump.
I know, but yeah. It's still Superman.
Matt, speaking of some changes that are made in this cartoon, instead of having the primary crush,
where's Mary Jane, Bob? Where is she?
No Mary Jane, no Gwen Stacy, no Liz Allen. Instead, it's Pearl Pangan. She was new to me. I'd not heard of her. Apparently, she's a Filipina superhero named Wave, and she debuted in the 2019 Agents of Atlas comic series, which I knew that came out, but I hadn't read it. So I was very intrigued that this is our new primary crush for Peter Parker, his former babysitter.
I had never heard of her, but they introduced her like she's someone I'm supposed to know, and it didn't really jive. It was weird I knew who Nico was and not her.
I would also say I was pretty annoyed, speaking of a new character, or at least a character in a new context. We have Lonnie Leakin as a high schooler jock for this version, and I can't say that I love that choice.
I mean, he's destined to become Tombstone, right? Is that the plan, probably?
Yes, although I do kind of wonder if they're actually going to go that route, because that's one of the weird things is, like, every supporting character in this series basically is a superhero in Marvel Comics, but are they really going to go the route of them all becoming superheroes and supervillains? That seems maybe a little doubtful.
I don't just get jock vibes off of him, and the show makes that pretty a clear distinction that he's got brains and he's poor and he's good at cars and football and he gets the girl and he's friendly. He's going to go bad, Bob.
I don't know, man. Good Flash Thompson.
I know they built him up. I mean, he doesn't even beat up on Spider-Man. I mean, it's
what if Flash Thompson were a good guy? So will they? I mean,
come know, on.
You don't turn Flash Thompson evil.
No, that's never happened. All right.
It
really?
Yeah.
Didn't he become Venom at some point?
But he was a good guy.
Oh, he was the good Venom. He was the one, the stealthy looking one.
Agent Venom. Actually was a pretty good comic.
I've actually read the first volume, so yes, it was pretty good. That's the only reason I know about it. Yeah, it's pretty good. Bob, so toward the end of this first episode, there's a scene where the pizza store owner, and there's this kneeling, webbed-up thief who's, like, crying, and then Spider-Man is offering the manager guy. She was starving for food, needed the money or whatever. Let her go, or do you want her to meet a restaurant? That was weird to me. Did it seem odd to you?
I had mixed feelings about it. On the one hand, I thought it was good that he was at least trying to get this girl off.
Right.
On the other hand, it's a little bit like, why is it Spider-Man's job?
Sure.
Like, $10 doesn't get robbed from a pizza joint.
It sounds like it's a way for him to get a class, Bob. That's really all it boils down to. He just doesn't want to go to school. He's just bored, Bob. He's bored in school.
Well, Matt, being Spider-Man has really turned his luck around, and we know this because from this awkward encounter, he gets free pizza, and then later he gets a free DVD player. And to me, that's about the best day I could imagine, a free pizza and a free DVD player.
Yeah, I need pot for the physical media player, Bob.
That is correct, man. That is correct. So, for our first episode, Amazing Fantasy, I hope you get that reference, Matt. I hope it doesn't go over your head. But for the first, who was your character of the episode?
Nico Minoru. I'm going with Nico, Bob, because she was unexpected, and I was excited to know such an obscure character. I really felt like you when you talk about the Legion.
I'm glad that at Midnight Suns, I respect you for it. I like the Midnight Suns. They're cool. They're a cool crew, even though I didn't remember Nico was part of it. For me, I'm going to go with Harry Osborn. I was pretty critical of the decision to make the Osborns black, but keep Peter Parker white. I felt like you should just make everybody black. But having actually watched the show and seeing how they have a lot of different African-American characters and they have really cool visual styles for them, on the whole, the show is not as weird or as racist as I feared. And I thought especially the Harry Osborn character design was great.
Oh yeah, it was awesome. Yeah, the design of everybody in this show is awesome.
Very true, very true. Well, in episode 2, Parker Luck, Matt, I just wanted to start by noting that it is pretty funny that the jocks are all supportive of Peter while the nerds are all bullying him.
Yeah, they flipped the script, yo, Bob. They flipped it.
Well, speaking of the nerds, Matt, who are flipping the script, let me run these down and see if you know any of these. I only knew a couple, to be honest. There is Cha. There's Amadeus Cho, there's Jeannie Foucault, and there's Bentley Whitman. Know any of those?
Okay, Amadeus Cho rings a bell, but I don't know why.
The super smart guy who's the Hulk's sidekick. He debuted in the 2000s, and for a brief period, he was the Hulk, although usually he's just the super smart guy who's the Hulk's sidekick. He's bigger than any of these other characters. Amadeus Cho is He's the only one who starred in his own comic of these four.
Who's Asha?
She's just a super smart girl from Wakanda. She apparently has shown up in some Black Panther comics I've read, but I just didn't remember her from them. And I didn't read the comic where she debuts. She apparently debuted in 2013, an Infinity tie-in in 2013.
Oh, okay.
So she was, like I said, I've read comics with her in, but she's never registered as a character to me before today.
All right, and the Bentley Whitman character, he seems like what I'm going to end up looking like one day. What is his deal?
Well, Matt, think back to a recent comic series we read together. He's a character from that, the Marvel Universe. He's still pretty obscure.
Fantastic Four, something though.
Yeah, he's somebody from the Fantastic Four. He has a young clone.
Oh, the Wizard Man. Yeah.
The Wizard.
How did I not put that? Okay, that makes a whole lot of sense. Okay,
yeah,
cool.
Because remember, his clone is Bentley 23.
Now I know who Bentley is, too. Well, I know him. He's pretty famous. There you go. Yeah. All right, there's one other character at it. I don't know this other one.
Yeah, so Jeannie Foucault, I'd never heard of her. She's apparently the Taskmaster's daughter. You know the Taskmaster, right?
He looks like a skeleton man. He can copy people's powers and moves and stuff.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And her codename is Finesse. Apparently, she shows up in, I think, Avengers Academy is where she debuts. And so this is what I mean of, like, literally... There are six people in this lab, not counting Norman Osborn, and all six of them are destined to be superheroes and supervillains, if you go to me, as well as the three other people from Peter's high school. So I think it's probably likely that, you know, they're actually not going to explore all of these people becoming costume characters. Does that make sense?
Or they could go the Sony route, Bob. And they could have Norman Osborn turn all four of them into bad guys in his lab. It will be weird.
Bentley Whitman and then our gender-swapped Lizard are the only two who would be normally bad guys.
Right.
Them a swerve.
Well, yeah, this is an alternate reality, Bob. We can get all kinds of stuff. Amadeus Cho may be good on your side, but man, he comes to this reality.
Hey, yeah, go ahead. Any thoughts on gender-swapped Lizard?
Like, Bob, I'm to the point now where I don't even notice, like, that stuff. I guess that's the beauty of all this, because I 100% do not care. Female, male, it doesn't matter. But with that being said, though, Bob, I do want to say this. I do have, they're kind of creative with it, and maybe they've researched female lizards and have some really creative things they can do. Because I'm sure female lizards act differently than males, I would assume.
I don't know the specifics, although I have told you this story about an ex and her eventual husband and the female kimono dragon, right?
I believe so, yes.
It's a good story. Well, Matt, another character recognition, although I didn't recognize him at all, the fire villain is apparently named Butane.
I love that name.
I don't think they used it in the episode.
No, they didn't use it. That's awesome, though.
Apparently, he's from one of your favorite comics when we were kids, the 90s Excalibur.
Excalibur!
Although, I think he showed up in the 60s of that title, which the early issues and the more current issues. I don't think he had anything around issue 60.
Nah, I'll have to go look it up somewhere, because that sounds... I just want to see this character again. I did really like the fight scene, you know, that took place between Butane and Spider-Man, because it took place in a pet store, which was good. That was good on their part, because they started off in that abandoned building. I was, this is stupid. Give us some action. Give us some things to mess with. And then... Spider-Man spending the whole time saving the pets and then also whipping this dude's ass. It was just fun. But the fish thing, man, the fish, I was for a long time thought they were just going to let it go. Okay, we're just supposed to ignore the fish were there. But no, Spider-Man went back and got him and saved him and then smashed that dude's face into the ground.
Very cute.
It was
very
brilliant. Cute. Brilliant.
Well, Matt, the big twist at the end of this episode, Norman Osborn has security footage of Peter Parker turning into Spider-Man. And honestly, I've been reading superhero comics my whole life. And so my first thought was, oh, this is the kind of twist you do. But then you have Peter come up with some contrived excuse and Norman believes it. Do you think that's what's going to happen? Or do you think they're going to commit to the twist?
Please keep the twist. Like, I left this one wanting to know what happens next. And this expedites everything just because within the second episode. All right, now he already knows he's Spider-Man. We don't have to, you know, go through this long this back and forth, is he not, all that crap. I don't want all that. I like the way they're just being quick and keeping these twists coming. I like that.
Well, on the one hand, you might say that Norman toying with Peter or beginning to suspect that Peter is Spider-Man can be a really interesting cat and mouse game, but it's also a cat and mouse game that's been done.
Right.
Like, one can read the comics for it, and one can watch several prior animated versions for it. So it is interesting. Like you were saying, I hadn't realized this, but it seems like the premise for this episode is basically what if Norman was, or the premise for this series rather, is what if Norman Osborn was Peter Parker's mentor instead of Tony Stark.
Right.
And there's interesting potential there for storytelling.
There's a lot of good stuff. And we saw the whole Tony Stark thing in the MCU. So we got, already got that. So we have it to compare to. And I think that's what they're going for here. And I mean, we all know Norman's probably going to end up being Green Goblin at some point. Let's be real here. They're not going
to... Although maybe they'll do something like they bypass Norman and go straight to Harry.
That would be good. That would be good.
Well, Matt, anything else before we pick our character of the episode and get out of here?
No, not really, Bob. But my character of the episode for this one goes to Butane, Bob, because he's got that familiar obscurity, but he's a completely disposable villain.
Well, Matt, just real nostalgia for Excalibur. Anytime an Excalibur character comes back, Matt's happy. Hopefully we'll get this Peter Parker dating Shadowcat before we know it.
Yeah.
And then for me, I'm going to go with Jeannie Foucault for telling Peter the truth that she probably won't remember him at all. That was a very cliche joke, but sometimes the cliches are cliches for a reason, folks. That one made me laugh.
That's true.
All right. Well, we're going to try and cover this week to week. We got a crazy release schedule where I think they're putting out 3 episodes next week, 3 episodes the following week, and then 2 episodes the week after that to wrap it up. So we'll try to cover it week to week, although that is a lot. But stay with us at Uncanny Treks for Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man coverage. I am Bob in Cascadia. That is Matt in the Southland. Have a good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Spider-Man, as whenever a Spider-Man spins a web, his eyes and chances, and just like guys look out, he pounds a Spider-Man.